Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Thank you. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajeem. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. I greet our listening audience in the greetings of peace, and I ask for protection from Shaitan during the presentation. And I bear witness today is but one God, and I bear witness that His messenger. And to the humanity, and I greet you all once again and welcome you here to Seeing the Power of Mental Freedom. And we've been presenting this program, Encouraging the Power for Mental Freedom, for a number of months now, and we have begun to get some traction in terms of people listening and people taking part. You must have mental freedom, or you don't have the power to control your life, to control your very thoughts, and the way you carry out your daily routines. We don't have power over those without having the power of mental freedom. During this evening, we're going to again go over the program that's designed for this evening, because we're in the middle of, or in the beginning primarily, of the African American Culture Month. Some call it Black History Month, and some know it as by the name it originated as the Negro Week. It was originated by Carter G. Woodson in around 1924, and he thought that the African American people should have a time during the year that they draw their attention to the importance of their cultural identity, what they have done, what their forefathers had achieved, what they had been able to accomplish over the years, and that will help to inspire the African-American people to greater heights if they would simply just turn themselves to the acknowledgement and of their forefathers, what their forefathers had accomplished, not just the trials they had gone through, but what they had accomplished through those trials. You must have a mental freedom, is what he was saying, in terms of being properly educated. You must have the ability to think for yourself. And ironically, most people think they have control over their mind. Most people think they have that control, but they really don't. There's no way that we can be in control of our mental freedom when the things that can in charge of the mental freedom, we don't have access to them and the totality of them. We don't have access to the media. We don't have access to the education system. We don't have access to those things. And by access, I mean not just the ability to be part of it, but have access to what is given, what is done, what is taught, and the material that is used. We don't have that kind of control. And because of that, it's very difficult for us to educate our people in the terms of free-minded, free-thinking people, people who will think for themselves because they have been taught, because they have been given the beginning of life, which is the teaching the person on the aspects of life. And this is what the African-American people have been missing for many years. They've been here in North America. Today we're going to cover a subject called Exposing the Predator. Exposing the Predator. And this is a situation where if we don't have knowledge of what the predator is or who the predator is, there's a good chance that we can become the prey of that predator. They can devour our wealth. They can devour our time. They can devour all our belongings in terms of what we have to offer. I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African-American Bilalian Griot. I have 17 years of formal education and with a bachelor's degree in sociology, much study from Kane University, much studying, a lot of studying I've been doing over the years to gather material. For over 30 years, I have gathered the material of the African-American culture and been addressing the issues that face our culture. And many of us may not be aware of what faces us, but once we see the evidence, then we can be able to see how this affects us. And as a griot, part of my responsibility is to write and speak about the African-American culture and its relevance to the landscape of the world. We have to know where we stand in the world and how we can benefit ourselves and benefit our future. If we don't have this to benefit ourselves or benefit our children, there is no real future for the African-American people. One of the things we want to cover is that many times we hear many African-American scholars talk about the conditions of the African-American people, and as they are talking, they are explaining those conditions as if the solution is within their grasp. But to have the solution to a problem, you must really have a concept of the problem itself. And most of our people don't have a real concept of the problem that exists in the world and in America today as it pertains to the African-American people. We don't have a real grasp of that. We think we do, but we really don't. Most African-Americans today are still calling themselves black people. Some of them call themselves African, and some of them call themselves people of color. They use these terms to identify themselves, trying to identify themselves and getting their position in the world. When you look at those ideas and concepts, you find that the same people who use those concepts call the European can call the European American white people. And just to think of the impact of those words, it clearly shows that the user of those words, especially if they use them the way the average African American uses them, they're not in total context. They're not in the context of which they should be looked at. The African American uses those words as a form of identity, self-identity, or identification of others, or ethnic identity, all those kinds of things, all those kinds of ideas and concepts. The way we use those words really go against the concept of what the words mean. I was watching a program several days ago, and it really a program which leads us directly into our subject today. It was a program where a fellow by the name of Kelly, he was talking to a group of people. It seems as though it may have been several thousand, a couple thousand people, and the majority of them were African American. And he was asking questions to the audience. And one of the questions he asked them to do is to follow him and repeat to him what they think are the country or the nationality or the identity of the person or which he would call out or the country he would call, identify the people. If they call the people, identify the country. He began his talk. He said, Germany. And the crowd overwhelmingly says, Germans. Then he said, Italy. And they said, Italians. Then he said, Irish. They said, Ireland. Then he said, Ghana. They said, Ghanese. Nigeria, Nigerians. And then he said, black. And when he said black, the audience couldn't find a reasonable answer which identified what black was relevant to what he had asked them to do in terms of identifying the country and identifying the country nationality and the people, connecting them as it was a puzzle. They wasn't able to do that. And there's a good reason they weren't able to do that, because it doesn't exist. There's a reason you can't identify white people with a landmass or with a place of origin, because it doesn't exist as it relates to people. The colors exist, and you can even get a psychological impression of what that color may mean in terms of attitudes, in terms of the emotions of a person or situation. But the words themselves or out of place when you talk about identifying people. And no matter how much or how well you place your words to identify those words, to identify a people or a person, is out of place. There's no such thing as white people. That word was invented. The situation to use that word was invented. It was invented during the colonial times of America when they came up with an idea that they were going to create a condition in America where the colonists wouldn't be able to unite. I know that some historians say, well, they just started using white and black as a way to identify the different people in a different religion. That is absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true. No evidence showed that they identified a African-American or African or a European in terms of calling them white, relevant to their belief or non-belief, or relevant to what they thought they believed, in order to keep them separate from one another. There's nothing that come close to identifying that. What does come close to that, they use something that was already in place. They use something that was already in place to separate the people, masses of the people. And that, what was already in place, started in America, in Jamestown, in America, in Virginia, when the slaves were first brought to America. They came as Africans. Africans are slaves. They were calling them. They were already part of a process that started hundreds of years, thousands of years before slavery came to America. America was very late in the business of slavery. America was very late in coming into this concept of enslaving people in America. Although they weren't very late in slavery, because they came from Europe. And in Europe, they had forms of slavery, enslaving their own people. They enslaved people from other countries to build Europe. Rome had slaves. The Greeks had slaves. They had slaves in different countries long before they came to America, before they even knew there was a place called North America. This wasn't a new situation. But what happened in America to make this situation pertinent was that the Africans and the Europeans, they lived together in colonial America, in Jamestown, in that Virginia area, and Maryland. They didn't have separate quarters. The town wasn't segregated. The slaves and indentured servants were pretty much in the same area. But what happened in 1676, a European colonist became angry with one of the governors of Jamestown, of the Virginia colony, because he thought that the governor was not giving him a fair deal on the furs that they brought in from the frontier, on the treatment of the Native American. He thought that they should give him a better situation, even in their parliament, even in their ruling group. But, of course, the governor refused. So what this fellow did, his name was Bacon, Nathaniel Bacon, what he did, and you read this in your history books, what he did, he went out and united the slaves, the African slaves and the European slaves, the indentured and the Native American who was here. And he was here before all the other Americans, so that made him a Native American to this country. He united them as one group, and they all came into Virginia, in Jamestown, Virginia. And they demanded that the governor give them the rights that they were looking for in terms of sharing the wealth. Of course, the governor refused. So this army that Bacon had put together attacked, burned Jamestown down, and took it over. And it took another a year or so before the English can send some troops in to Jamestown, to the Virginia colonies, to get them back, straighten out the land, to get them where they were back in control. Bacon died after a year. He had caught a dysentery, as they say. But the skirmishes continued that he initiated. After they settled skirmishes throughout the colonies, the English allowed the governor of Jamestown to put into place a system that will cause the colonies to become discouraged about uniting into one group. They had to come up with an idea to bring about a form of segregation that wasn't legally called segregation, but it was a form of segregation where it would come about voluntarily. And in order to get this form of segregation to respond voluntarily, they had to put some things in place. And what they put in place was certain laws. They put in the laws that stated that the European slave or indentured servant, whichever one they were called, if they're from Europe, would no longer just be called that. They now would be called white people. That's the first time in the history of the world where a people was identified by a color, by white. Beforehand, they had talked about people in terms of the darkness of their skin or the lightness of their complexion. But the use of the word white to identify them, not just characteristically, but racially, was the first time there in Virginia. And then they say everybody who's called white people got special privileges. They could carry weapons. They can have a day in court. They can own property. They could do a lot of different things that they excluded from everyone else who were not called white people. So that form of segregation, racial segregation, was beginning to take place, and it was initiated there in colonial America for one reason, and that reason was to prevent the workers from uniting into one group. And the only way they came up with was to separate them by way of color, one group white and the other group African or black or Native American, or use one of the native tribal names. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of racism in America. Now, Europe had their own form. Europe had another form of racism that dealt with the difference in ethnic groups, dealt with the difference in nationalities, dealt with the difference from the Irish, from the British, and so forth and so on. They had their own situation going on in Europe. But in America, this was what was the foundation of racism, the foundation of white supremacy, the foundation of African or African-American inferiority. All those complexes were beginning to form. And you could just see in the nature of the identity that those particular complexes can be passed from one generation to the next. And they were. They were being passed from one generation. As the new generation came in, they taught them those lessons, especially the European colonialists taught their people that they were called white people, and they were better than the Africans. They were better than the Native Americans. They were better people. They clinged them to racial identity as well as divinity. And when a group of people, an ethnic group, whether it be of a race or other, a culture, whatever it may be, when they begin to identify themselves and make identity in context and incorporate it in the concept of divinity, then that's the concept that we spoke about in the last meeting about what they call ethnocentrism. It's an ethnocentrism. To think your ethnic group is better than another ethnic group, and therefore all the other ethnic groups have to follow the pattern that and blueprint that your ethnic group has established. And then when you take it to the next step of divinity, then you go into the ethno-religious concept that the God is the same complexion as they are, and there is a God that looks like them. All of that is formed at that time. Before this in Virginia occurred, they had paintings in Europe where Michelangelo and other painters have painted pictures of what they call Adam or the Garden of Eden and what they call a God. And they painted those pictures to look like Europeans. They didn't call them white people. They painted them to look like Europeans. And they painted Mary to look like a human being. The virgin birth, the one they call Mother Mary, they painted her to look like a European. They didn't say paint this person as a white person. The term wasn't used then. The term wasn't even thought of at that time. They only knew themselves as German, French, Irish, English, or British. Russian, they knew themselves like that. Australian, they knew themselves like that. They didn't know themselves or identify themselves as white as opposed to something else. Because to them, there was nothing else. It was just one nation against another nation in Europe. So when you look at the real essence of this whole idea of race and racism and psychological warfare that carries on, you will find that there is no real grounds for African Americans to ever use the term white people as it relates to a human being, because the moment they say it or think it, it establishes a superiority event in their mind. A superiority event in their mind. They can't help it because the word, the way it was introduced to them was from a superior platform. It was introduced to the African people at a superior position, and it still is used that way today. It identifies itself as not part of the people, but superior to the people. Not part of the people of color, but superior to the people of color. This idea is probably the most difficult aspect that the African-American people will have to change in their own mind, in their own behavior, in their own thinking. They're going to have to change from believing that the European-American is a white person. Because it triggers so many things in their mind, in the African Americans' mind, it triggered right on. It triggered all the way down, all the way up to the God concept. That's what triggers in the African American mind when he uses the word white people. And as a counteraction to that, of course, we find that. Especially in the time of the Nation of Islam, with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that his teacher introduce a reversal process. And that reversal process, to counteract what was happening, what had happened in colonial America some 100 years or so ago, before fraud came, to counteract that, they just reversed the process. He introduced his lessons to the African-American, to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as identifying the white man as the devil. Yaqub's grabbed the devil. He put a whole story concept and put a philosophy together that told how that man came, how they came into existence, how they were created by a big head scientist by grafting one generation at a time. Let's see. I think my screen is out. I don't know if it's even on. And something is going on. Yeah, feedback. Okay, I'm going to have to, I don't know if any of you have been able to hear at all, because the program had gone out. So I'm going to have to go out and come back in terms of studio, the studio, and give the so my phone is still on. So I think that the possibility that, although my studio is not showing, the possibility that you can still hear me. So until I go out and come back in, I'm going to continue as if you can hear me on the phone. I can't see you or see any of your responses, but I'm going to see what's going on with the page here. I'm going to temporarily, if I go out, that means the page itself would, the studio would go out. So we just give this a little, and in the event that you can hear, those of you who were taking notes or who have some of the books that we have out, we were talking about the subject this evening is exposing the predator. And in order to lay that foundation, we're simply talking about one of the characteristics that a predator uses in order to dominate a people, in order to make the people not be able to grow or develop on their own. So just patient for a minute. I'm trying to put the studio back in. Again, I'm not certain. My phone is, what we are talking about is on the phone here. And what is going on the page, we don't see. In the event that it is going on and the page is still working, studio is still working, I want to just continue the thought that what we were just talking about in terms of I see the studio is back, but I don't see the other aspects. Okay, well, let's move on as if the studio is back. I don't see any. In fact, I don't see any on that side. I'm getting a call here. Maybe that's the. Well, let's continue as if it's on, because the phone is on, and I see a connection on the studio board, but I don't see any anything. If any of you can hear me, would you please push the one on your phone so come up and I'll be able to tell. I don't see anything. So, but at any rate, let's continue to look at that and go down that line of thought, dealing with European American and how the European American developed this idea of racial superiority in a very subliminal way. It doesn't seem as though it was intended to get the impact that is getting today, this whole idea of white supremacy. It wasn't intended to do that. It doesn't seem as though it was intended to do that. The intent was primarily to separate the people, to keep them from uniting into one unit against the government, against the ruling class. They created this buffer between the classes. So one class wouldn't unite with the other class, so they both would, all three would come against the European colonial, the governors. That's what they were really trying to avoid and trying to stop. That was their objective. But we see now, because the power of culture is to carry characteristics from one generation to the next, we are bearing the brunt of that behavior that took place some hundreds of years ago for another purpose. Not another purpose in the sense that it was opposite to what's happening today, but a slightly different purpose that today they are using the same concept, same principle to create another form of superiority. Even though the people, the European American and the African American, are not separated, not even in a separated state, but they keep this idea of togetherness in a form of the physical presence, but they keep the division of the people in a mental status. The mental status of the country, African Americans and European Americans are separate from one another, and the European American is superior to the African American. So the African American, to try to balance off the superiority, as in the conversation I had just a few minutes ago relevant to the Nation of Islam, they had to come out with a something that would balance that thinking. And the thing they came out, they said the black man now is on top and the European man is on the bottom. White man is the devil, they identified that, and the black man is God, they identified that way. That created a reversal of thinking. And we created a reversal of thinking in the environment, not only just amongst the European American or the African American, but the world, because the world now had begun to feel and hear the responses coming from America about the conditions, the social conditions that was going on in America. So it was affecting the whole concept, just reversing the concept that the white people are people with special privileges and black people are inferior and have to get all their instructions and everything from the white people. Just reversing that thinking, although much of the actual practice of it stayed in place, but just to reverse that thinking caused a real, not backlash, but it caused a real impact in America and the world. Now, the key and the importance of what was happening to America was that the African American was now beginning to reverse a process that has kept the African American out of the concept of that we were a free people. Most African Americans think that we were free after the Emancipation Proclamation because the Europeans said that. Not because they had come to that conclusion, because the Europeans said that there was no more slavery. No more slavery does not identify the citizenry of a person. And the Africans were free before the Emancipation Proclamation. Many of them lived in different parts. In fact, there was almost 13% or half of the colonies outlawed the work concept of slavery, that you cannot have that kind of workforce anymore under those conditions. In other words, you could not get this contract drawn up between you and another controller that your power was over another person, and the other person couldn't do anything about it except maybe a few things to try to have a little better life. But generally speaking, his life was under the control of someone else because of a contract that another person had sold him into slavery or her into slavery, and the other person paid for that privilege. That wasn't true with all Africans in America. That was true with only a large amount of the Africans who was in Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, places of that nature. But the ones in New York and Pennsylvania, Delaware, they were not subject to that. They lived in regular. They lived where they can have their own farm systems. So it wasn't a freeing of the African from slavery. It was an abolishment. It was an abolishment of the system of slavery, that no one could have that anymore. And that abolishment came as a threat. It started out as a threat by Abraham Lincoln against the Southern Americans, because they had superseded themselves and they divided themselves from the Union. And when they broke from the Union, they had to do something to get them back to the Union. And Abraham Lincoln's primary objective was to get the Union back together, whatever it took. He made a statement that if it took keeping the slaves and they could get the Union back, they'd do it. If it meant freeing some of the slaves and keeping some, they'd do it. Whatever was necessary. And then he used the slaves as a threat to the Southerner, because the Southerner was still dependent upon the slave system to generate their funds, to generate the money, to help in unloading the docks down in Texas where the imports and exports came in. All that was managed by the slave system. So Lincoln said, if you don't come back into the Union, we're going to declare that there can no longer be a work system by forcing people to work in that system anymore. And they knew that once they did that, that would automatically kick out the concept of slavery, and kick out the concept of the Southerner having some foothold to deal with the Union or the Northerner, to have their control, their power over them. So it went away to show how that whole idea of thinking about slavery, thinking about the concept of a black person and a white person, it went to give that whole thought, that whole practice, that whole thought, the idea and concept was invalid. But they didn't just come out and say it was invalid because all people in America, all the colonists, all of the people who worked in America became independent and free of Great Britain some 100 years before then in the War of the Independence, when Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence and the colonists decided to go to war in 1776. Now, you notice that was nearly 100 years after Nathaniel Bacon's uprising in Virginia. And that was before when the Emancipation Proclamation was enacted or even thought of. So the African was free at the time when the colonists won their independence from Great Britain, because that's who they was fighting. They were fighting Great Britain. They weren't fighting the slaveholders. The battle wasn't with the slaveholders. The slaveholders had to fight alongside the slave in order to free themselves from Great Britain. So everybody was in the fight. You had some of the colonists who was on the side of Great Britain, And they fought against the other colonists who was against Great Britain. You had the ones who fought against Great Britain, the Patriots, and the ones who fought against the Patriots, against the colonists for Great Britain, were the loyalists. And they were European. All of them were European. And the Africans divided between the two. And when the Africans decided to come on the side of the Patriots in numbers, that swung the whole war for the side of the Patriots. And that's when they won their independence from Great Britain, from the King of Great Britain. And everyone was free. That's what they fought for, freedom. Everyone became free. There was no such thing as you free and I'm not free. That was the argument that came up after the war. The Southerner wanted to keep the slaves because they still had the plantations to run. They still had the ports to come in Texas to they needed that whole area down there as an export-import. They needed slaves to run that. They could have paid the slaves just as workers, but they rather use the slave market or the slave system because that was nearly costless, more profit. More profit being made on the slaves than having them just as workers. And that's the first, that's not the first time, but that's the major time we begin to see in the history of America this idea of the predator, this idea of how a human being can become a predator to other human beings. And most of us, in the definition of the predator, we know that the predator feeds on prey. They figure in the wilds, you will find they are great hunters, and they know how to hunt the animal and bring the animal down and do all the things necessary to eat the flesh of the prey. Now, human predators are the same way. The only difference between the human predator doesn't have to do it. The human predator is not in the nature of the human predator to make prey on another human being, but is in the nature of an animal to do that because that keeps with what they call pruning the animal kingdom, causing the weak. And ones who are not so fortunate, they prune it through this predatory system. It's natural in the nature of the animal kingdom, but not in the human kingdom. It's not natural. When the human being takes on that concept of the predator, he's taking on an unnatural concept, and he's using it to justify that they're taking advantage of another human being. And that taking advantage of another human being is what they primarily did during that time. They primarily were, we would call it, in a predatorial state of mind. And it doesn't make any difference what color the prey is, whether it be an African, whether it be an African-American, whether it be a Native American, whether it be a European. The predator then takes on this characteristic. And you've heard the term that is not personal. We don't take this personal. This is not personal. It's just business. That term was invented by a predatorial mind. It was a gangster. A bookkeeper for the mob who came up with that phrase. This is not personal, it's just business. That gangster, along with some other predatorial-minded people, their behavior is connected. Their behavior is connected all the way back to ancient times, The predatorial nature that the human beings has taken on is not new. There wasn't new what the colonial slave masters was doing. That behavior wasn't new. That behavior had been in Europe, had been in Africa, had been in Egypt, formed for the very purpose of taking advantage of people who didn't know they were being taken advantage of. And there are many names that this this predatory nature goes by. Some of it very mystical. Different myths came up. You'll read about different stories that occurred where this kind of nature existed. Some of the most common names, excuse me for a minute, some of the most common names that you probably, perhaps you might have heard of, is Satan. The word Satan is talking about a predator, predatorial nature of the human being. The word devil is talking about the predatory nature of the human being. It corrupts. It corrupts from the very nature of what the human being was actually created in into a more aggressive nature, to not only be aggressive in the culture, but take advantage of people. Take advantage of them as prey. Shaitan is another term for this aggressive nature. This is not, as we said earlier, this is not a new nature, new term. This predatorial nature has been existed in the human being, it seems as though, since the human being came into existence. Even when the human being was still walking on and living in trees, it seems as though it's there, where the human being corrupts his own good nature to become aggressive to another human being, even his own brother, for a gain, to gain wealth, to gain money, food, any kind of possession that he can get from another person by using some form of trickery, not just force like we do with the army. An army is very forceful. Sometimes that's not a predatorial position, but it may be the mind of the predator who is governing the army, because they want to take over the land. Some people in charge want to take over the land, so they build the mentality of the army to respond to their command. We see what's happening in the East right now. That's the predatorial spirit, full bloom, of the human being. The same spirit that they call Shaitan. The same spirit they call the devil. The same spirit they call Iblis. All those terms are talking about the predatorial nature that the human being adopts to take advantage of other human beings. That's what it is. It's the human being adopts this nature to take advantage of other human beings. And this is basically what the slave masters were doing. They was taking advantage of other human beings. And every time a situation came to straighten out their mentality, to keep them from being like that, they would do something to promote that. When Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, when he penned the Declaration of Independence, there was a chapter in the Declaration of Independence before as one of the complaints they had against Great Britain, against the King of Great Britain. You see, the Declaration of Independence was written in a fashion to give the reason that one country or one people, one group, were getting ready to separate themselves from the other group. And they felt it was only respectful that that group separate themselves from the group that they was interested in getting away from, and let them be aware of that's what they were doing. They were giving them a reason why they wanted to break away from them. And that's why it was called a Declaration of Independence. We want to be independent from you. And we're declaring that. It's what they're saying. We're declaring the fact that we want to be independent from you. We don't appreciate the way you've been doing things. We think we can do it all better ourselves. So we cite these things. We think that the The King of Great Britain did not treat the colonies fair. We think the King of Great Britain, they cited several, when you read the Declaration of Independence, you're going to be able to see that. But one, and the one that when Jefferson wrote, that the King of Great Britain has bastardized himself with this concept of the slave trade. The slave trade he was talking about, it should be abolished. In the Declaration of Independence, that's when that was first put in there. But because there were so many of the people, the voting people who were going to vote for the colonies, they had slaves. They still was running and needed to operate the slave system. And they were doing business with some of the northerners who had the ships in to bring the slaves in. So they had a reason to want to see that system not be mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. Now you can see the predatorial mind coming into existence now. To take advantage of a group of people, they want to eliminate one of the reasons for their separation and declaring themselves to be independent. So they voted on it. And this is all in the history books. They voted on it. And the Southerners who wanted to, and Northerners who wanted to keep the slaves, or the slave trade, said that they should not put that in as one of the complaints against King of Great Britain. They should not put that in one of the complaints. They voted to take that out and put it into a more biblical kind of cause to say that we don't like the behavior of the King of Great Britain. They put that in there. But you can go to your history books and find that clause because they still have it. It still was part of the writing of Thomas Jefferson. And they felt as though it would just damage the relationship between the King of Great Britain and the Southerners to so much so at that time that they didn't want to have that omitted in the Declaration of Independence. So you can see the predatorial mind coming into existence there, how the predator is beginning to get control over the Americas, how the predator is beginning to rule in America in order for them to take advantage of the less fortunate, in order for them to take advantage of the people who were here, the Native American, the people who were brought here, the African, how they can take advantage of them, and the European. They wanted to take advantage of any human being they could to build a greater wealth for themselves. And as the people began to grow, the predatorial spirit had to develop more sophisticated approaches. One of those sophisticated approaches was to come up with the Constitution of the United States. They came up with the Constitution of the United States as a way to get a greater control over the national elections. In other words, the colonies were pretty much autonomous to one another, and they had their own votes, and they had their own way of defining who was going to be the president, because they had presidents before George Washington. He was the first president after the Constitution. But before then, 8 to 10 years before then, they had other presidents, another way they were running the colonies. So the predatorial minds got together, and they figured out a way to run the colonies and keep their control over the masses. They were about trying to keep the control over the masses, not a better way for the masses or the people. They were looking for a better way for themselves. And as true to the nature of the predator-minded people, they begin to scheme. They begin to put a scheme together that would rob some of the people of their human rights and give some of the people opportunities that they didn't have before. And so they put together the Constitution of the United States. It was about, we started out maybe 54 or some of that nature, but only 39 signed because some of the others were disappointed in the behavior of the predatorial mind that was putting that together. Jefferson never signed the Constitution of the United States. They very seldom mention that, but Jefferson never signed the Constitution of the United States. Madison never signed the Constitution of the United States. Madison was the one who said he would cut off his right hand before he signed the Constitution of the United States because it took away the advantages of the less fortunate, and they didn't have control. See, all that was going on in that fight between the predator and the civilized thinkers. The civilized thinkers were thinking about the behavior of the people, the benefit of all the people. But the predatorial mind cared only about themselves and what they can get from the deal. And for those of you, I can see someone coming back on. For those of you who are just coming back on, it's good if you would search out this idea of the predator. We have much information on it. And if you go to my website, buildanewafrica.com, you will find some of that information in my blog talks. And you can just download them. But the true identity of the predatorial nature goes all the way back, as we say, all the way back to the evolution and the development of humanity. It goes all the way back to that development when they would tell stories and tell myths to the people to deceive the people. That was a predator mind working during that time. And they would tell the people that the root of their problem was this creature, the devil. But they didn't tell the people that predatorial mind, that they themselves were that same devil who was carrying out those particular events or particular traps, behavior to control the mind of the people. That's the weak part of the human being. When the human being allows greed become the controlling factor of their behavior, even though it would help hurt and hinder other human beings. The human being that is defined as the one who was created to be a benefit to the creation is the one who is more apt to help other human beings. Over and above some of the things that occurred, they would sacrifice some of their own to make sure others had something. Now, the predatorial nature of people is just the opposite. They wouldn't care if the people were dying in the street, that's what they are. They wouldn't care if people were hungry and starving, which they are. And until the predatorial nature get out of the human being continues with that turnover. But some of the human beings fight for the right to be human, fight for the right that humanity should be better. And even some of the predators, after they have done all they can do to get their wealth together, even some of them have shown that they change. They change their mind in terms of how they treat people. Some of them even do what you would call good things. Philanthropists. Some of them, like Carnegie, he began to build libraries all over the world with all of his wealth. In fact, he spent all of his wealth before he passed. That was evidence that the human being did not have to die or did not have to remain in that state of mine as a predator, as a Satan, as a shaitan, or as a devil, bringing destruction to human life. He was one, and there were others who continued it. There was some like Rockefeller who figured out ways to continue to enslave the mind of the people by taking over the school system, and especially the African-American people. Took over the school system and made sure they were being educated according to the education that they thought would keep the African-American people in a more subservient position. This is how it evolved and how it is today. Now, we have, along the time, we're going to take a break, and I want those of you who would like to ask a question, make a comment, you'll be able to do so, and because we want to keep the floor open to those of you who are here for the first time, or those of you who have been here a while for other weeks. We're going to play this particular break and just remind you, after the break, we're going to take
God's
and make
peace
comments.
Be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you, my son. We want to thank you very much. We also want to remind you, too, we're here every week. This is also a continuous programming by AMC 360, that we have programs daily and evening and morning all through the week, that you'll be able to listen in on some of the programs that are here by other presenters and other hosts. And you will be reminded by them of the value of communicating. And we want to do that right now. Any of you who have any questions or would like to make a comment in regards to the presentation thus far, please push the one on your phone and you'll be able to come in and make a comment. Okay, well, I don't see any hands up, so we will continue. And because we want to complete this before the time is up, this concept and idea about the predatorial nature of the human being, and why it's very important for us to look at this and become more in line toward the human beings. This is explained many different ways in the religious texts, and it's very important that we do research there too, those who really have a mind to want to know what is going on in the world. Much of it is explained in the religious texts that we read daily as to how and why things are the way they are. The religion that we have, whether it be Muslim or any of the others, but primarily those Abrahamic religions, have the answers. The answers in what we call a pictorial language, not pictorial language in the sense of all of it is in pictures, but it paints the picture in your mind, and it gives you a picture that you can interpret in your mind that what is going on in the human sense, what is going on in a way that we can be closer or further apart, depending upon our interpretation of what has been revealed in those books. The human being is a special creature, and we have special characteristics. And those special characteristics sometimes can get away from us because they are so powerful in the sense that the emotions, for example, your emotions are part of you, of the human being. Your intellect is part of the human being. Your consciousness is part of the human being. Your morality becomes a part of the human being, of your behavior. But your emotions is part of the human being also, but it has a degree of independence. And that degree of independence, it does not have to go along with rational thinking. It doesn't. You can think of something that's rationally thought out, but if you don't want to go along with it, you don't have to, because of the power of the emotions. The emotions have this power that if it could talk, it would say it's more powerful than the intellect. It would say that it's more powerful than any other part of the human being, because it can do things that the human being, other parts like the moral conscience can't do, or the intellect cannot do, other things that govern the physical, even the physical body of the human being can't do some of the things that the emotions can do. The emotions of the human being could tell the human being that the world is not flat. The world isn't that flat. The world is round. And yet the human being wouldn't have the rational thinking to believe that. But because of the intuition, what the intuition that comes with that emotion, they just have a belief that it is not flat, and they work accordingly. There are other things that the human being says no to. The idea that the human being can fly. If the human being's intellect had stayed in charge of that thinking, then man would not even be able to fly, because it didn't make sense during the time man was trying to do that. Usually, when one human being comes in contact with the knowledge that's a little different than the others, they tend to come up with reasons why they shouldn't be that. Those of you who read scripture, take the story of Abraham, for example, Abraham. The story of Abraham is a person who said, well, that what you're worshiping is not God. But yet all the people who were worshiping him said it is. And what you're talking about is not. So that shows that strength that's there in the human being to not believe something, even though everyone else believes it. But they have the strength to say, no, I don't believe that. That comes from the emotional capacity. See, the emotions are good as long as they're used in a good form. And this is to identify the way that the human being has evolved. And those of you who are of Scripture and believe in a deity, you know that the human being was created by God. That's the way the human being was created. Tendencies. With these tendencies. And when you read all of the different books that talk about the same God who created man, he also warns man against the negative of these tendencies and how to take care of, how to be mindful of them, because you can go wrong with them, because you have the power to make up your own mind. So the idea of the predator is one that the human being takes his emotions, his thirst for greed, his thirst for power, his thirst for his want, not thirst because he really doesn't need it, his want for power, his want for greed, his want for control, takes over and forces him, the rest of him, to follow that greed or that power. And they do anything to do that. They commit murder, they kill the family, they do all these things. All the evil you see in the world is coming as a result of the predatory nature of the human being. And I'm using the word nature, but it's not to say that the predatorial of the human being is natural. The predatory spirit of the human being is not natural. It can be formed out of the emotions. What is natural is that the human being has to be able to use that for the benefit, use the emotions for the benefit of the human being. So it's a way of regulating ourselves. And if we don't have that power to regulate ourselves, or we don't use that power to regulate ourselves, because we all do have that power, but if we don't use that power, then that control our lives. That same predatory nature that we see in human beings who causes war, causes allow people to be killed in war, and allow people to go hungry, all of those things, and gangsters who just push dope throughout the world and the country. All of that will be in charge if the human being does not get to the point where the human being can control our emotions. And you can see how this predatorial spirit, or some call it satanic spirit, or the spirit of the devil is in control. You can see that so clearly when you look at the conditions of America. Some of the countries are a little slower than America because they are not as new as America. Other countries and other places, even Africa or whatever country you want to go to in Europe, their cultural identity is deeper and has been in place longer than the cultural identity has been in America, especially that of the African American. And because they don't have a culture that continuously remind them of their behavior and the things they should be doing in terms of promoting the wellness of the human being, they begin to live all kinds of ways, do all kinds of things in terms of wearing clothes, not wearing clothes, going nude in the street, drugs, and you see they're going wild. And the reason the predator would like for the society to be wild because it's easier to sell them things. It's easier to sell them drugs. It's easier to sell them ideas of how to do something that's going to benefit the predator. They're in control. It's written in scripture that Satan is in control. He's the prince of darkness, the prince of evil. Well, that's how it's done. It's done by breaking down the moral consciousness of the human being. If the human being's remains morally strong, Satan has no, the devil or the predator has no advantage to wage war over the human being, over humanity. In fact, he becomes obsolete. But as long as the human being doesn't have control over his emotions, then he is truly what is called the prince of darkness, meaning that the emotions of the human being are in control and the moral consciousness is pretty much in the dark. And that's where the prince of darkness lives, of a morally weak society. They can control it with his ideas and concepts from the different ways of developing humanity. As we move into how and the African American got into this and how he can get out of this, that too becomes a matter of strength. It is a matter of strength that has to come from each individual in order to begin to change the society. Because this weakness where the predator operates freely in it's to his advantage. It's to the predator's advantage. It's not to the good-hearted people's advantage to have their weaknesses in the society, to have the society, people doing whatever they want to do, mothers against daughters and daughters against mothers and fathers against sons and sons against fathers. And the old saying is they that's why they keep this black and white concept alive, because they want to be able to pit them against one another whenever they want to cause some friction in the society, whenever they want to get control of the masses. They use these things as techniques to control people in the way that the people will not be able to see what's going on, because they'll be constantly told by the predatorial mind what to do, what to say, and how to do it and how to say it. But for the African-American people, there is a way out. Not a easy way out, but it is a way out. And what the European-American has done to the African-American by putting them enslaving them, is not so much as making them a slave to his operation, the European-American, who was then governed by the predatorial minds, not so much that they was putting the African enslaved for the uses of the European, but because of that motivation, the African was being actually created into a different group of people. And I know that for some African Americans, they may not be able to feel that, because you would say, well, why would the Creator allow the African American to go in slavery? Again, let me preface that this by that African Americans weren't the first to go into slavery. Africans have been enslaving Africans thousands of years, hundreds of years before the European brought the African to America. Europeans are enslaving Europeans. Easterners were enslaving you, China, all of them enslaved people. Many of them enslaved people their own, enslaved people who was they were at war against. Whenever they were at war against someone, they would capture those people, and rather than kill them, they made them slaves. That was not a new process. But what was new in America, what happened in America was new, that we can't find any other people who had gone through slavery. We can't find evidence that show the miraculous growth in the African-American community from that event compared to any other people who were enslaved. We can't find any people who were enslaved who became has risen as high as the African-American people have in America, and we're not even in charge. We're not even in charge. I know that much of what we in is almost like you would say a false picture is painted. It gives a picture of one thing when really something else is going on. I know that occurs. But when you look at even the countries that had gotten their freedom from Great Britain and the Africans are in control, like the Haitians and so forth and so on, the people, generally speaking, have not risen as high as the African-American has in the African-American's condition. He's not even in control. But yet our standard of living has risen. Why? Because the country itself has risen, because the people have risen. Although we didn't rise next to them, we were on the bottom, but it's because they did get so high, it gave us an opportunity to look out across the landscape of the world and begin to measure where we are and where we can go and what we can do. The African American, the Africans who were brought here to America, has been created into a new people. Into a new people, a people who had never existed on this planet before. You go back 500 years ago, there's no such thing as the African-American. Sure, there's Nigerians and there's Ghanese and there's Sudanese. All of those people existed, but not in this form, not in the form that some of them are mixed with European, some of them mixed with Chinese, some of them mixed with Native American, some of them mixed with different tribes that came from the western part of Africa. And then there also was a breeding process that took place that breeded this African here in North America. It didn't occur in other parts of the Americas because there was no need, because slave trade was still going on there. It was prevented here in America by the King of Great Britain. The slaves could no longer be sold to the Americas. So we are different people. We are different people from the African. We're still brothers. We are different people from the Chinese, Japanese, and so forth and so on, and the European. But we are still a part of the human being. Most times, people get that all mixed up. Most times, the people think we're one race, even though they will be looking in the face people who are of a different race. We are all the human race. We are all the human race. But within the human race, there are different races that evolve because of the area in which they are, we say, grown or cultivated. Whatever part of the world they went to, that part of the earth took on a characteristic and changed the genetic makeup of those people to be resembling the area in which they come from and the effect that area had on the genes, which created a new people. So you get the Watusi, who's 6'7", 6'11", some even taller, and all of them live together. The Watusi, you get about maybe 150,000 or 200,000. They all live there, and they're surviving, and they have children, and the children come out like them. You don't get the Watusi having children, and the children look like Chinese, and the height and the weight of Chinese or the Japanese. It doesn't happen. And you don't get that nowhere in the world. Where you get in the world, you get the people who look like the area they come from. This is why people are judged by their place, not judged, but people who are determined who they are by their place of origin. Where their place of origin, where they come from, that usually shapes their genetic makeup, and in that time, they develop the culture amongst themselves. So their cultural identity and genetic identity, their heritage, is generally in a particular area. So when you look at people in terms of place of origin, then you begin to identify people more in a way that is better, in a way that stands to reason. You look at people in place of origin is much better than looking at people in terms of color. So you will see the place of origin for the European is Europe. And they could be more specific, say Germany. It could be more specific and say Italy, place. And if they're American, they're German American, Irish American. You take the African, the same thing in Africa. From Nigeria, he moves to America, have children. They're Nigerian American. They could be called African American also, because they're from that continent, not the country, because there's no country called Africa. They're from the continent of Africa, but the country of Nigeria or the country of Ghana. Or someone from Japan, same thing, Japanese American. China, Chinese American. But for the African American, the one who came during the time of slavery to the North America here, you can't find a country that we come from. We come from almost all the countries. But there's only one country that we have formed this genetic makeup in and this culture in, and that is America. The same country we've got our freedom in from the British government, from when we fought for our freedom. That's why we are African American. And this is why the African created their own language while they was here. They didn't. When the African came here, they wasn't allowed to speak the different tribal languages. They created their own. They created their own language called Geechee. This language is now in the Schomburg. They got a record that this is a language. It's not a dialect of. It's not a breakdown. It's not any old thing like that. It's a language created in the Sea Islands and in the southern part of America by the Africans. And it's still being spoken today. In fact, Harvard is teaching it in the African-American study courses. Quietly they're doing it, but you can read about it. They don't want you to know that you were created and that the Creator created you and me. The Creator did this. The European didn't do this. The European made slaves. That was the European's objective, was to make slaves. But the Creator's objective was to make a free people who eventually would be a people who could think for themselves freely. That was what was happening. And not only did they invent their language, because as you know, in 1783, that was the first time we saw the African used the term referring to themselves as African, and because they had won their freedom, they called themselves African American. So this is, if you want to know where we are from and who we are, we're African American. We come from the genetic pool of Africa and Europe and other genetic pools, but we sort of originated with all those foods. We originated and made the combination here in America. So if we would say who is the real American, we would have to say is the one who was created here in America, not the ones who walked into America from Africa, coming up through South America, or the ones who came down through the Bering Strait, down through Europe into North America. They walked in. Some of them sailed in on boats hundreds of years before the European ever knew about this country. But they weren't created here. They came here on their own. They were a migrating culture, and they brought their cultures with them. Only people on the planet Earth who was created in America and had to create their own culture here in America, and who are the true American, are the ones who call themselves African American, not black people. There's no country called black people. We shouldn't even accept that thinking. Anytime people accept that kind of thinking, you know they're mentally crippled. They cripple themselves when they call themselves black people or Negro or any of those kind of terms the European give them. They take the terms that they earned. We earned the term of America because the Creator created us here in this land. And the only evidence that we have that the greater majority of us are from a particular area is from the continent that they call Africa. And again, that's not a country. That's a continent. So it's more is applicable for the African American to take the name of a continent, not a country, but a continent, and identify it with their creation here in America. So the African American takes on the whole continent. They can't say, no, you're not Nigerian. We said the whole country, the whole continent. You're not, every time they tried to call the African-American a Nigerian or a Ghanese or any of those, they're taken away from who we really are. They don't want us to be who we really are. We deserve the identity of a continent. The European doesn't even have that. Although the European could call himself European American, but you trace it back, he's Irish. He's really Irish American. Or German American. Or Spanish American, not not the ones who speak Spanish, but the ones who are from Spain, the Spaniards. There's about 2 million of those in America. But it's not but one group who deserve and has earned the right and went through the hardships and everything that was necessary to become a people is the one who calls themselves after the continent of Africa and identify where they won their freedom to be independent in this country. That's the African American. There's none like us in that sense. We're not saying this to stick our chest out and to be better than someone else. We're only talking about the condition that formed us. We're talking about the condition that formed us and that which our foreparents took advantage of to continue to build a culture that can identify with that formation. A culture that could stand and move on. And now this culture that we call the African-American culture has a voice at the table, has a seat at the table of humanity. And we, in this modern day time, have the right and the power to take all our possessions and identify them with ourselves. From our music, to our clothes, to our science, to our knowledge, to our ability to do things, all of that we can attribute to our growth and development. And it should be identified as part of our ongoing and growing culture. We are a creation. I know some African Americans are not ready for that because they still don't believe it. They still do not believe that God has the power to do that. They will believe that God has the power to have a man walk on water or a man divide a sea with a cane or a God who would rain down the stones and things out of the sky to destroy a whole town, a city. They believe that a God has that power, does not have the power to create a new people. They say the same God had the power to create a baby from a woman who never had a man as a mate. She was a virgin. And they said that God created a baby and called that baby Emmanuel. Some say Jesus. Some say Esau. Has that kind of power to tell the fire where Ibrahim stood in the fire of the furnace and tell the fire to be cool. Don't burn Ibrahim. Don't burn Abraham. Let Abraham live without any scars on him. The God that has that kind of power, they believe that he does not, that God does not have the power to create a new people. And they will believe this with the evidence standing in front of them, with the evidence facing them every day, with the evidence facing them that the African American are a new people created in this part of the world that comes from all the other parts of the world, but never, you can't find no evidence of this unique group of people in any other part of the world, and only in this collective here creation. This is one of the reasons they don't like to tell you that the human race is one race, but all the other people are races within that one race, from the Pygmies to the Watusis, to the Japanese to the Irishmen. All are different. But they don't want you to get in that frame of mind because then you just might. You might have the strength to believe that God created you as a unique new people. For an example, for the world to see, God has the power to do that. Although, you know, the same world has the power, has believed that God has the power to do all those other miraculous things, but they don't want to say that he has the power to create a new people out of slaves who were brought to America to be someone else's slaves. And God turned them into a people, created them into a people. Well, you see, the reality is that this is a reality. And all you have to do is look in the mirror. You don't have to go anywhere. In fact, what I'm telling you, the information I'm giving you here, you don't even have to need. You don't even need. If you believed. If you believed in yourself and just looked at your grandmother, your grandfather, and so forth, you will see you came from all different parts of the world. There's a little bit of everybody in us. But this is where it all came together. But it's a matter of belief, believing it, because the evidence is here. You should rationally understand that. Your rational mind should tell you that. Your rational mind should say, we are a new people. A new people, and we're going to do the work of God, whatever that work is. We don't have to identify that work. You don't even have to say, well, he's to lead the people or to follow the people, any of that, if you just believe it. You just believe that you are a new people, created by the Creator, your responsibility to be yourself will take over, and then you would be able to evolve just on the basis of belief, just on the basis that you believe that you are a new people created by the Creator with a responsibility in the world, to the world, and for the world. That alone will cause the African Americans to evolve. To evolve. We also have proof of that, too. That when a culture assumes the position of believing in themselves and believe they have the power, an ordained power, to achieve, they build civilizations. Not just what the European has done here in America, but before the European was here, the Aztecs were here in Mexico, built big civilization. All these other places on the planet Earth was built by people who had the aspiration and belief that they could achieve. Look at what would happen with the African American with this potential to be able to think like that, to be able to do like that. We have a few minutes left. We had some problems with the program. I'm not sure all of you was able to stay on or not, but what you can do, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, because we're getting ready to sign off, just push the button, push number one on your phone, and you can come in and you can ask your question or make your comment. Okay, let me play one more announcement here.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Patricia Nitma Muhammad of Eyes on Our Community, asking you to join me in supporting CWSC and American Muslim 360 with your tax-deductible gift. Log on today at CWSC.us. and click on the donate button or call in your pledge at 910-317-0297. Help build a national intelligentsia and let's keep American Muslim 360 strong and ready to remake the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We want to again remind you all that this is AM 360. And I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the host of the program, Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. And we're here every Tuesday, 5 to 7, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. And you can dial in, ask your questions, or make a comment. And you also can visit my website to get some of this information in the blog talk section and download it. The website is Building New Africa .com. Build a New Africa, USA.com/. That's Build a New Africa, USA.com/. And you'll be able to pick up those just go to the blog talk session and you'll be able to pick up some of the conversation. And you'll be able to also get this recording if you go to AM360 or Blog Talk Radio and look up AM360. You'll be able to get this recording and the recordings of any of the other programs that came on. And I want to remind you, too, coming on immediately after this program, we have Courtship and Marriage, which is being brought to us at 7 o'clock. Very beautiful presentation. And we pray that you'll be able to stay and listen to the presentation. And we apologize again for the problems that we had earlier in terms of having everything come in succinct. It don't look like it ever came in correctly, but we did get some of the people over on the side we needed, and we got some of the information back. I want to remind you, too, that you all to have the opportunity of going to some of the presentations this month. This is African American Cultural Month. And again, the reason we call it the Cultural Month because we are a culture. And the black, we explained that today, why black is not really a good title or a good name for us to use in reference to ourselves as a people. So we look at it as the African American Cultural Month. And the reason we do that is because it came to us as a group, how we were formed and how we were named by some of the great leaders, African American leaders before. We have Carter G. Woodson is the one who called it the Negro History Week. Now, he was the first one to do that. It wasn't European Americans who did this. That's another misunderstanding we get. It was an African American who was a scholar who said it's very important that Africans use the term Negro, and that in his language in 1924, that Negroes should study their history, study the history of their people. He said, because if you don't have a knowledge of what your people have achieved, you lose the inspiration of what history and biology brings to a people. See, so it's very important that we look at this month and try to bring out more people to the different events, different educational events. We should put a lot great focus on education during this month, too. So, and encourage those who don't, there's some African Americans who don't think much of this month. They don't think of it as being African American. There's some who even think this was invented by the European American. It wasn't. The European American didn't come onto this platform until after we had some college students at Kent University and some of the faculty. They got together and went from the 2 weeks it was called the Negro History Week. They changed it to the Black Cultural Week, and then they changed it to the Black Cultural Month, Black Cultural Month, Black History Month. That's the term they use, Black History Month. And then the government got into it, and of course they saw so much impact was coming that way, they wanted to get their hands in it. So they said it's legal. This is a History Month. We look at it as a Black History Month. Act as though they were the ones who started it and who celebrates it, but they weren't. It was done by African Americans. Even the first initiating it, starting it, Carter G. Woodson, and even the students, African American students, who then stretched it to a month, and then the government got into it. And we, those who are also coming to some of this other understanding about there's no such thing as black or white people. That was only a scheme to keep us divided and away from the truth, that we moved into what it really should be identifying as our culture, because people don't exist without their culture. And if you wipe out a people's culture, you wipe out the people. And the culture is the only thing that takes us from one generation to the next. So African-American culture is more applicable for this for us to use in terms of identifying what we're looking at, what we're doing, what we're celebrating, and what we're thinking is very important for our people. So that's a very important thing that we pass on to our children so that they can start identifying themselves as a people. They can start identifying themselves as a people, not a people of color, not a black, not a Negro, none of those things, but identify themselves as an African-American, and they would be able to explain why, and they'd be able to make sense why. They'd be able to bring the truth why. And then when the question is asked in the audience again, like the Brother Kelly asked that audience that we mentioned at the beginning of the program this evening, when he asked where's the Irish man from, and everybody said Ireland, and he asked where's the German man from, they said Germany. When they asked where the Nigerian is from, they said Nigeria. When they asked where the Ghanaian is from, he said Ghana. And when he said where are the black from, they had no answer because there's no place called black. So we're beyond that now. Now we know where we're from. We're from America, and we're not black America. There's no such thing as a black. No part of America is black. It's not even the soil. It's dark, dark. And then there's African American, because we're taking on our foreparents. This our foreparents did this in 1783, took on the continent, the name of the continent, not a country. A continent, and those of you know that a continent includes all the countries in that particular vicinity. So he took on a name. They took on the name of the continent. They say we are African. They identifying themselves. And that was in 1783. So our foreparents have done their job to bring about our culture to this point. Now it is our job to continue elevating ourselves, that we can keep tend to the evolution of our culture. We're moving in different areas now. We're moving in the, we're doing something down in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. We're building the African American Cultural Center to represent and to bring closure to where our people came in into America. Charleston, South Carolina is where 70 to 50% of our people came into, were brought in on slave ships in Charleston. And half of the city was enslaved at one time. So we want to bring a cultural center. Culture is designed to promote culture. And we want a cultural center to promote the culture of the African-American people. We want them to be able to know who they are and everything that's relevant to that as to who they are. And we want to be able to encourage other people to come to the center and be educated, because it's more of an education center. It's not like a museum. A museum is for dead things. It makes the dead things live. It talks about what was and what existed before. They put them in a wax museum and things of that nature. But a cultural center is promoting the culture that it represents, and that's what we want to do, is do that. And that will bring about a great opportunity for our people to advance and develop. We're going to have from government, economics, education in terms of sciences, and we're going to have the humanities, covering all aspects of the religions, different ones, and how we're going to develop and make sure that our people are thoroughly taught about their culture, and so much so they'd be proud to stand anywhere in the world and say they're African American, and we want a seat at the table. We don't want to stand on the sidelines behind somebody else sitting at the table telling us what's going on. We want our own seat at the table. We want to stand in the line ourselves. We want to be participators in the world that's coming. We don't want to be on the sideline. And the only way we can do that is to identify ourselves as not something vague, but something very specific. something very unique. Like all the people on the planet Earth, Watusis are unique. Pygmies are unique. The Japanese are unique. The Asians are unique. Europeans are unique. Irish from the Swedish. All of us are unique. And we are too. And we should take our stand to be ourselves. That's all it takes, to stand to be ourselves. Stop letting people call us what something our foreparents never gave us. Our foreparents gave us our identity. Gave us our identity before any of us were born. Before our grandparents were born almost. So I want to thank all of you for coming out. Make sure you're here next week. We'll be here at 5 o'clock, 5 to 7. And bring your friends and relatives. We're going to have another discussion on another aspect about what we are doing in terms of here we have the name of next week is going to be see you next week. We're having maybe having someone in. But at any rate, be here. We're going to have a very good discussion next week about another aspect of the African-American culture. You will be able to hear that here at AM 360. And I want to greet you all in the greetings of peace of Assalamu Alaikum. And may God be with you all. And we have the next program coming on right after this, so stay tuned. It's courtship and marriage coming on immediately following. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.